Welcome to another episode of the award-nominated motorsports show, Pit Lane Parley. Like the show, leave a rating, retweet our show post, or don't. Want to chat racing more? Ask us to join the PLP Twitter group.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. I am your host, Mike Jokum. Frenchie is here. Sarah is flying back from California, so she will join us next week, maybe. And let's dive into some trivia, and then we'll talk about IndyCar. Congrats to Kyle Kirkwood on his first IndyCar win. It was a really nice drive for him this weekend, and he is the subject of the trivia question. So this is similar to the New Garden one I did. I don't know, was that last week or the week before? Can you name me? We'll go with USF 2000, Indy Pro 2000, Indy Lights, and obviously, I guess, IndyCar. Can you name me every team Kirkwood has driven for in the US Open wheel, not counting USF 3, which he also raced in?
Okay. I know in USF 2000, he started with Cape.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember that. That's how old we are and how young he is, I guess.
Yes.
For some reason, I'm not remembering at the moment who he drove with in Indy Pro 2000, which is odd to think of that. But then he moved to Andretti for Indy Lights.
Yep.
And who he also obviously drives for now. And then he drove for Foyt last season. So I just have to think of who he drove for in Indy Pro, right?
Yes, and bonus points if you can get USF4 or USF3 that he also ran in.
Am I going to know either of those teams?
Both of the teams are current Road to Indy teams. One you may have already... I'll give you the one since you mentioned it. He raced for Cape in F4 the second year he did USF4.
Okay.
The first USF4 you will not get because... I've never heard of them before.
All right. Well, I think if I'm thinking back to which teams would have been doing F, you said F3?
F3, yeah.
Yeah, USF3, and that's still a current IndyCar team or an Indy Next team. It's going to be Able, right?
Yep.
Okay. So he did it with Able, but I don't even know what year that was, 2015 or something?
2018.
Oh, okay. Wow, never mind. Yeah, he was like
sorry. 2017 and 2018 he was with. He did Able Motorsports in 2018 for F3. He did Cape Motorsports for 18 for USF 2000, but he also did Cape in 17 and Primus Racing in 16 for F4, USF4.
Okay. That he drove for that team, that Italian one that like it went under in Indy Pro 2000, and I can't remember. It was like
two letters.
Just banging my desk. Hopefully you didn't hear. Oh, it's RP Racing.
Yeah.
Roger Penske, but it was sort of for something else.
Yeah, definitely not Roger Penske. Unless Roger Penske went in Italian for that year before they went defunct.
Yeah, that was that their only year?
No, I think they were around for like a handful of years at least before that. Let me see. RP Motorsport, they were in Formula Regional European the last couple of years until 2021. They were in Pro Mazda / Indy Pro / whatever the hell it's called now for 18, 19, 21. They did Spanish F3, Euro F3, Euro Formula Open. Yeah, they've been around. They've done a lot.
Sounds like they were trying to do way too much.
This was not all at one time necessarily, too.
Oh, okay. But he won them the title, didn't he? So they should have just kept rolling.
Maybe. I can't scroll backwards now.
I'm pretty sure he won the if he did, it was 2018 was his year of...
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. USF, then in Indy Pro, he won. Because he won at every level. And they keep repeating that on every single broadcast that you see a picture of Kyle Kirkwood. He won at every level of the Road to Indy. And now... He's won in IndyCar.
Did you know Marcus Ericsson has become even a better driver after winning the Indy 500 this year? He is more dedicated. He has a mental coach. He is going to win again this year. I'm just repeating the broadcast now.
If you did that in an Australian accent, literally, I would have thought you were Lee Diffie right there. And I'm not making fun of Lee, but like that is, I think that you just quoted him word for word.
I think I got that cadence down pretty good, too.
Yeah, that was really good.
Wait, so before we talk about the race, you have like a favorite TV show, like a current TV show that you're watching?
Yeah, I think I talked about it on a previous episode with Malukas. It's American Auto.
Oh, I still have to get back to that. I have not watched it since I was at your house.
But it's good, right?
It was very good. So like 3 weeks ago, I started the very popular Ted Lasso.
Like, okay, I still haven't touched that one.
Really funny. Fantastic. Like an easy watch. You know, it's very light. Like if you zone out for a minute, like, you know, you're not missing. You know, it's okay. But really funny. And I was talking to a young lady who I'm going out with for dinner tomorrow night for the first time.
But not too young.
No, not too young. Don't make me sound creepy.
And, you would have called her a young lady.
Yeah, fair. And so we're talking about like Ted Lasso. She's like, oh, I'm so sad it's the last season. I didn't know it was the last season. I literally started it 2.5 weeks ago. And now I'm like, I'm a little bit bummed out. I mean, obviously it's not her fault. She didn't know that I didn't know, but yeah, I'm a little bummed.
And so did you cancel the date with her?
I should, because, you know, I'm tired of being canceled on, too. So it's time to, like, I don't know. Yeah, what you said.
Yeah, the show's being canceled. That date should be canceled.
Yep. Exactly. Okay.
It's parallels. So,
Kyle Kirkwood wins his first IndyCar race. It was, I think, for Long Beach standards, a solid race. The end was pretty exciting there with Ericsson kind of making a hard charge. Grosjean having all this push to pass, but not enough gas to get to the end. But let's, you know, before we talk about the good, let's get out of the way. Let's see here. Pato had a rough day. So the Scott Dixon thing is, you know, the kind of main question I have for you here. But he also took it way too deep. I think that might have been actually on Kirkwood and Ferrucci when he kind of slid, you know, on that restart and he fell back, like, you know, back to where he ended up finishing. But what's your take on the Scott Dixon incident?
I think it was a late move, but I don't think it was unfair. I mean, it's a bold pass, right? Yeah. I mean, it's something that Pato would do, right? It's aggressive. I mean, I think, I don't know who said this. Was it Robin Miller that called him like Juan Montoya Jr., essentially? I don't remember if he said that or if I'm just misattributing that to him, but that's kind of what I always think about. And not because they both have Latin heritage at all, just like their style, a personality, and, you know, the way they drive, all that kind of stuff. You know, although Pato, I would say, is a more cheerful Juan Montoya, which is kind of like refreshing.
Yes.
But, you know, that's a move that type of driver would make. And I don't know, I guess Dixon is not somebody who usually ends up in situations like that, but I don't think there was anything that he could have done. But I also really don't think that there was anything Pato could have done other than just try to wait longer to pass him in another corner. But we know how difficult it is to pass at Long Beach, and it's Scott Dixon. So can't really blame the guy. I'm sure Scott's unhappy about it, and Pato obviously is like not happy about it, because I mean, he's no longer in the lead of the championship, but, you know, these things happen.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like, once you make that first mistake, you try to make up for your mistake and you end up making a second mistake, which, you know, happens. None of these drivers are perfect. They're all human. And so I also didn't hate the move. I thought for sure, I looked over at my dad, like, they're calling a penalty. It just felt like it was too borderline. Like, I could have seen it go either way. I agree with you that it was just kind of late, but not necessarily dirty. Obviously, Emma Dixon also disagrees, you know, which we come to expect. at this point, I think you like you texted me like, I wonder if she's going to say something. And then I sent you the screenshot like instantly. And I'd only found that screenshot like a minute or two before you texted me that. But
yeah,
let's move on from that. We don't need to waste time there.
I'm not even making fun of her. She just,
yeah,
she always defends Scott, like regardless of what happens. And Scott's usually not in the wrong, but she's his biggest defender all the time. Yeah.
Callum Ilott, kind of a rough day. And I hope after IndyCar kind of, or, you know, the track promoters re-added that curb that they had taken out for Friday. And then Callum stuffed it into the wall Saturday morning in practice. And then VK did as well. I hope IndyCar gives them a little bit of a financial break, because that's not fair. It's not fair that it wasn't communicated to the teams. I don't think we need to go any further on that one, but Callum Ilott also got sent out of the pits after already being a lap down in the race on a restart right out in front of teammate Agustin Canepino, who was leading because he did not pit.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was just bad timing. You're just kind of going like, ooh, Junco's day has now gone from bad to worse. And I don't know, do we need to go over anything from that godforsaken incident?
No, other than I think it's related to something we just wanted to quickly touch on, because I think it's pretty clear what our views on this are going to be. But a driver receiving death threats, I mean, that shouldn't be happening. I mean, that probably... It feels weird that has to be said, right? Like, these are sports. I mean, I don't really know what situation I'm trying to think where a death threat is warranted, but about sports and your driver, I mean, that's definitely not one. I get the national pride that a lot of Argentinian fans have seeing, you know, an Argentinian-based team, essentially. I mean, I guess they're based in the U.S., but with Argentinian roots and a driver coming over here, but I don't know. There was nothing to that incident. So the fact that he received that kind of hate, I mean, we went back a few weeks ago when the Rossi Kirkwood incident happened at Texas. Kyle said he received a bunch of hate online. Who else did we see recently? Somebody else got some that made no sense.
Yeah, I don't remember. I know Pato had to post something too, so I wonder if he got some ridiculous messages. I don't know for sure. I spoke to him briefly this Monday morning, but we didn't talk about it. So I don't know. At that point I didn't really want to bring it up, but
yeah.
And I, all around what you said stands, I don't need to add anything to that, but it's really disappointing. It's disappointing, yeah. Because we're like, oh, F1 is so toxic. And then like, you know, IndyCar has done the same thing when IndyCar fans are better than that. I mean, F1 fans should be better than that too. Don't get me wrong. We should all be better than that.
It's basic humanity. I mean, right. That's what it comes down to. And I'm sure no one listening to this podcast, we talked about this, is a type of person who's going to make death threats. And if you are, you really need to go look in the mirror and just figure out why you have so much anger over something that really shouldn't like warrant that reaction. Yeah. But I think the last thing that I want to say about this is that comparing it to F1, we have so much more access to the drivers in IndyCar.
Yep.
And you get to communicate with them directly. A lot of the time they'll reply to fans on Twitter, on Instagram, whatever it is. If they continue to have to deal with this sort of abuse, which I'm sure is, you know, what happens to the F1 guys, just because their following is so large that I guess, you know, out of a bigger sample size, you're going to get more crazies or more angry people. Sure. Then they're going to pull back and they're going to have a PR person just post canned stuff and that, you know, that's not really engaging, because that's what we see in F1, right? I don't think, for example, Lewis Hamilton, does he run his own socials? Maybe occasionally he posts something from his own, you know, on his Instagram story, but I doubt he's doing most of the tweeting for himself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and he's not replying to people or liking people's tweets. So it's not, we don't want that. We want the community feel of it. And if people are going to ruin it, then it's going to be sad for everyone. So yeah, we definitely can't tolerate these people. They should be reported. I mean, I don't know what the system on Twitter is now, unfortunately, for reporting or banning people. But I mean, if you see this happening, I'm not somebody who likes to be like, oh, go be a snitch, go be a tattletale, but they should be reported. That kind of stuff should not be tolerated. And yeah, it's really pathetic that these angry people hide behind their keyboards and say these pretty nasty things, because it can hurt. I mean, you don't know what somebody's going through on the other end. And, you know, what if they're in a fragile place and you say something that puts them over the edge? You got to think about your actions.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. And I'm looking at the box score here from the race.
I have our predictions if you want.
Yeah. And before we get to predictions, a quick shout out to the PLP group chat, especially Mike McCoy, Kiana. I didn't write down who I was supposed to give shout outs to. Definitely not Cody. McCoy, Owen, Shelby.
That counts, though.
Yeah, I know. That pretty much counts. And the whole group and
all the new additions, welcome.
All, yes, thank you. All the new additions. If you want to join, just send me a message or send the PLP Twitter a message, and we'll get it set up and join.
Yeah, or me.
Yeah, I mean,
add too.
Yeah, you can. I mean, if not, just let me know. But you should be able to. So yeah. Predictions. I know my bad prediction was not good because Willpower finished sixth. So
yeah, so I had Marcus Ericsson to have a good weekend, and I would say he definitely did. Third yep. place and leading the championship now. You said Rossi was going to have a good weekend. He was having a decent race until, unfortunately, something happened to him at the end, right? Like it was
suspension failure.
Yeah, broken suspension. So where did he end up finishing?
22nd.
Oh, okay. I was not looking that far down. That's why I was confused. Okay, so he did not have a good weekend, unfortunately.
Nope.
A bad weekend. I said Christian Lundgaard, who finished 14th, which, I mean, there were only 16 cars, it looked like, basically, that were on the lead lap, right?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a bad week. It was like an average weekend. It might be a good weekend because it's Rahal.
Well, where did Graham? Graham finished in 12th. Okay.
Yeah, they were all
Jack
right around
finished
there.
In 13th. So he was the worst of the three Rahal cars, but they were all right there. So, okay, yeah. Fine. He didn't have a bad weekend. So neither of us got that one right.
You were more right than me, but.
Of yellow. Count how many laps of yellow there are there. It's like seven yeah. laps of yellow total. You said 7 to 8 laps. You nailed it.
Hell yeah. Sarah, if you're listening, I nailed that one. I wish.
You just bribed him to crash out on the first lap.
Hey, Elio, can you just crash a little bit? Like, what was the other yellow for? Oh, Dixon, when the Dixon Pato thing. Then that was mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not usually that right with predictions, so I'm pretty pumped right now. I'm not gonna lie. I'm very excited. So predictions, okay. Who was your driver of the weekend?
Well, first you win the last one too, because we talked about pole sitter. And you didn't think there was going to be a new pole sitter either, but you said, I'm just going to say, yes, there will be, to be opposite of me. And you won again because we had a new pole sitter.
Congrats, Kyle.
Okay. Driver of the weekend. I think Romain Grosjean deserves a shout out. I mean, he was good in every session over the weekend. Like he was up there in the top. And unfortunately, I mean, he didn't win the race again. He's the bridesmaid, not the bride, once again. But you know what? I mean, he's just showing that he's not, what is it, an F1 reject, as someone controversially called him and others on Twitter this weekend, which is just the exact type of snobbery we don't want between F1 and IndyCar.
I will take Santino Ferrucci getting a P11 for Foyt, which is, you know, it was one of those drives. It was almost like the Rahals too. Like, you didn't really hear his name too much in the broadcast. And it's, you know, that's probably a good thing at this point in the year. You know, he kept it clean. He's probably made some passes, came home in a P11, obviously was aided by Rossi suspension failure late and Dixon and Pato and, you know, the other guys who had issues, the Yonkos guys and whatnot. But I mean, still, when you keep it clean, you come home 11th, that only, you know, helps you and helps the team and gives you some positivity to bring to the next round. Who is your disappointment of the weekend?
I was just looking at this, and there are people that I don't want to just continually harp on, so I'm going to pick someone different. Because there's unfortunately people who just continue to point like disappoint us week in and week out, and year in and year out, to be honest. And you know, that means we expect more from these people, but we haven't seen it. So I'm gonna unfortunately go with Simon Pagenaud. I mean, he finished 14th, which I really expect someone who is as talented as I think he is to do better on a street course like Long Beach. It just doesn't, it's something sits wrong with me that he's and the Meyer Shank team are just not doing well. I mean, Elio, no offense to him, I really only expect him to be good at on ovals or mostly Indy at this point.
Yeah.
But Simon, I didn't think the drop off would be this significant when he moved from Penske to Meyer Shank.
Well, you know, time to put on my tinfoil hat. But obviously, after they cheated at the Rolex, they're getting the hand me down Honda IndyCar engines too.
Oh, I thought you were going to say they're like the VOP is being extended to IndyCar.
That would have made a lot more sense. Okay, I will take. I hate doing this, but I will take Pato. Just not a, like, you know, a couple, you know, an unforced error. I don't think the team set him up perfectly in qualifying. You know, he went out at the end of Q2 or round two, fast 12, whatever you call it.
Yeah, don't call it Q2, man.
Sorry, on, you know, on new green tires when he was already safe to go into the next round, which I don't quite understand still, but
yeah.
Yeah. That's what I got there. So, yeah, I don't. Do we have any, you know, IndyCar news? The Indy 500 test is today and tomorrow. It could be just today because of the weather. We'll see. Go to Twitter. There's a bunch of liveries that have come out real quick. So McLaren has released now all four of theirs. Give me your best McLaren livery and your worst out of their Indy 500.
Hold on, I got to actually pull them up again. I don't remember.
Okay, well, I'll go. I'm going to go with Felix as the best, you know, with the kind of throwback to the old marble schemes. And I will go with TK as, I don't want to say the worst because it's not bad. It's just very uninspiring, if that makes sense.
Okay. All right, so I'm looking now. This is Rossi's, is just the orange. That's a tribute to the number 3 John Rutherford car from 1974. What else we got? Oh, is it? Which one is this? Is that okay? That's Felix's car then. Is the one that's a tribute to like the McLaren F1 car of the 80s? Yes. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And then what's Pato's? Okay, Pato is just like kind of all black. Oh, yeah, this one's the tribute to the McLaren F1 GTR Le Mans winning car with the, go look up what type of clinic sponsored them.
Yeah, yeah. I know that. Frenchie's saying that to you listening, not to me.
Yeah, exactly. He already knows. And then what was Kanaan's? I might not be impressed with any of these, to be honest, other than Pato's. Oh, he's just got a star thing, black and orange. You know what? I think his is actually the best other than Felix's.
Okay.
You said it was uninspiring, but I kind of like it more than the other ones, which are just primarily a single color.
So the Pato one, at first I was like, meh, kind of boring. And then when he posted the up close shots and it's got that kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of got a cool... It looks cooler up close than it does kind of from far away or from the imagery. But I mean, that's fair. Okay. Stefan Olsson and Cusick / Dreyer and Reinbold released their livery. It's cool. I don't think we need to spend any more time on that. And all right. I think do we have any IndyCar news?
No, I think the only news was the times being shifted for the test.
Yeah. So let's talk about.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, You're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
So there's no F1 this weekend. Baku is next weekend, but Baku is the street race. Baku is a street race. Baku is also the first sprint race of the year, and there's a new format. You understand it. I haven't read about it because you told me you understand it. So let's rock and roll.
All right, let's see if I can explain it well enough. So essentially, and none of this is confirmed, but it seems to be understood among those who have access in the paddock and have had leaks or whatever, that this is the way it's going to be. What we're going to see is essentially on Friday, there's going to be a qualifying session.
Okay.
And then on Saturday, there's going to be a shorter qualifying session. And I think in Q3, there's going to be basically one lap qualifying. So those who make Q3 are going to do one lap. And then that on Saturday will determine how the sprint race starts, whereas Friday qualifying determines how the race starts. So basically Saturday is like sprint day, as I believe the race F1 podcast called it. Okay. Whereas it like Friday and Sunday. So it's almost like a sandwich where Friday and Sunday are traditional, right? We have a qualifying session on Friday that I think will be traditional. So I think there's maybe one practice before that. I don't know what
there's probably one Friday morning practice like there has been for the street races. Yeah, I can imagine that at least.
So it's going to make Fridays. The idea is to make Friday more interesting, right? Because there's qualifying for the race instead of just practice sessions like FP1 and FP2.
Yep.
And then Saturday is interesting. Even though you're taking away the race qualifying, you have the sprint race qualifying and the sprint race itself, which is more like self-contained at this point. And it's kind of weird that it's a little bit disconnected from the race because it doesn't set anything about the race. It doesn't set your grid slot, but that is what's supposed to make the drivers be willing to risk more in the sprint race, right? Like, so you're not going to play it safe necessarily because it's not affecting your starting position for the next day.
Question. This is more of a, I don't know, this isn't a question to you, but sorry. So you're not going to play it safe hypothetically, but also are you going to play it safe because you're at a street course where the wall is right there and you've still got another race?
And you immediately just poked a hole through their reasoning for doing this, like their justification.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard to do. Yep. I don't think this is worse necessarily than the other sprint like format. It's just changing things up a little bit.
I don't think it's worse. It doesn't make me excited for sprint races, or, you know, doesn't make me any more excited for Baku. No. Whether there's a sprint race or not, it'll be a fine race on Sunday. I don't know, call me old or old fashioned or both, but
don't invite people to call you old.
Sprint races can be, could be exciting, but it's just the threat, like on a sprint race is on a street course with a threat of weekend ending damage, just doesn't right. make any sense to me.
There's still exactly, it's still before your Grand Prix, which pays more points. Mm-hmm. So even though the sprint race is going to pay some points, it's a lot less. And we don't know the exact amount. We'll find this out all next week when there's an FIA or an F1 commission meeting before yeah. the race in Baku, where this will all be, I guess, publicly released. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't think that this solves anything, because essentially the problem that we're seeing and why sprint races aren't that interesting, and I mean in the racing in general, is because there's one team who's dominating and the cars don't actually race that much better, even though that's what the regulations were intended to do. So
yeah,
you gotta solve that problem.
That's something we should talk about at some point. And I think it might have been George Russell and somebody who said in the last couple of weeks, like, you know, these new regulations aren't doing at all what we
it
thought.
Was Lewis.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Lewis. I didn't mean to confuse you for your teammate, but I just,
yeah,
it's not working. I don't think we can like lie and say the racing is now better than it was. I still think 2020. So the new regulations were, what year did the new regulations come in? 22?
Yes.
Yeah, 2020 and 2021 were significantly better than last year's racing, or so far this year's racing.
So,
I'm not saying that just, sorry, I'm not saying that just because Max Verstappen wins every race. It's just, there's much less action throughout the field other than three or four cars.
Yeah, no, exactly. And Lewis was very upset. He said something about, essentially, F1 broke promises to the drivers that these regulations were going to reduce the amount of dirty air by, you know, putting more emphasis on ground effects, right? And floor downforce, like floor generated downforce. And so you have the aerodynamic focus then shifted away from the wings, but to the underneath of the car. And we haven't really seen it improve the racing. I think I know why, and I'm not an engineer, even though Ross Brawn is a genius. Yep. These cars are really heavy, and they're the length of a Chevy Suburban. So maybe if you make them smaller and weigh less, and you get rid of, I don't know. Yeah, anyway, the F1's got a fundamental issue that they'll need to solve, or the racing is going to be flawed. That's just how the laws of physics work. You have these big, heavy things. It's hard to pass. Hard to maneuver them. You know, that's just, everybody knows this.
Agreed. Do we have any other F1 news?
Oh yeah, there's actually a decent amount of news this week. So the first thing we'll get to, I guess, is that Carlos Sainz and Ferrari, their appeal for the penalty was completely thrown out by
the
FIA. I wonder why.
Probably because Mattia Binotto went into the FIA office with some candy and said, please don't overturn that. Screw them.
No, they were supposed to, when you do one of these, I almost view it as like in the NFL when you challenge a flag, right?
Yeah.
It should be more limited. It should be the same way it is in the NFL, where you only have a certain number, you know, or because otherwise people are just going to challenge every single penalty and argue that they have new evidence to submit and just figure out a way that they can somehow manipulate the situation to not be a penalty. And, you know, if there's, I guess we saw the way that Aston Martin got away with it was that whole thing about the team not working on the car yet under a penalty stop, but they were able to put the rear jack, like touching the car was okay. Because the FIA hadn't penalized drivers for doing that in the past. Yeah. I'm sure we can find plenty of times where the FIA has not penalized drivers for doing the exact same thing that Carlos Sainz just did. So if the FIA wants to open themselves up to holes getting poked in their consistency, keep letting the teams just challenge anything they want to challenge. And it's just going to be annoying process, because that's how F1's going to work, right? You want to win. You want to somehow, he finished fourth, right? And he cried, which I'm not going to. Like, I get him being passionate, but I don't know. It was just a strange situation all around, and I think teams should be punished basically if they're wasting the FIA's time of just like, I'm going to challenge this, or like have the right of review, they call it, of course, because you have to have some fancy name, and it's just actually nothing.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it doesn't like take up time on like a race weekend, I'm pretty indifferent. I don't care. It's kind of interesting. Like, I guess this is like such an extreme example, so please don't take this like seriously for those who are listening. It's like in the NHL, they came up with a new rule for like the coach's challenge. If you have an unsuccessful coach's challenge on, I guess it's on any challenge now, you get a penalty. So not only do you lose a challenge, you're now shorthanded, so the other team has power play, which is kind of interesting, and it makes teams challenge these ticky-tacky plays a lot less. So in F1, could like if you raise a hand, say, hey, I want to challenge this during the race, you know, which doesn't happen, I guess, you know, so much, other than, you know, when Aston went to the team about, or went to the FIA about, whatever, when Alonso lost the podium a couple races ago,
and then
hey, if we don't like your challenge, you get a 10-second time penalty. I know that's never ever going to happen, but it's an interesting idea to just kind of like think out loud about.
Yeah, you get punished for wasting my time. I mean, we all know the kid when we were kids playing like a game in the neighborhood that would just basically change the rules up on you to win, or like would pause the game if things weren't going their way and try to manipulate the rules somehow, right? You know this person.
Cody. Time out.
And you didn't even know him as a kid. But so, I mean, that's what the teams are going to be like. It's just going to be this baby who's trying to make things go their way and have a tantrum. And if the FIA is getting frustrated with it, you should exert power instead of being basically an organization without any authority because no one respects you.
Agreed.
Imagine that. I'm feeling sassy today. All right. George Russell's facing a grid penalty because there was a fire, right? Obviously. And Australia, as his engine burst into flames.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he had that really old school looking like flame out.
Yeah.
So this is now his second engine already. So yeah, he's going to get a new engine for Azerbaijan, Baku, and he'll receive a 10 place grid penalty, I think.
Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. So
sucks. That's always something to look forward to, George.
Yeah, it does. We're also seeing that Aston Martin might be the team to take on Honda engines in 2026.
Okay, all right.
Maybe, we're not sure, because Honda's obviously, they can't make up their minds themselves, right? They keep
typical.
Like, oh, we left, but we're still, what is it? Red Bull powertrains, and we're still Honda behind the scenes, like doing everything for Red Bull powertrains. And, but we want to be in, but we want to be out. Like they can't make up their mind. So, they seem to be having second thoughts about fully leaving, which I think makes sense.
Yep.
They should just commit and stick to it. I know also it costs a lot of money, but I mean, they have obviously had a lot of success. So I don't know. Basically what Aston Martin said is that we're at the moment still in the process of making sure we understand all the options available to this team. Essentially, I mean, it could be them or Williams. Williams is not locked into Mercedes. They're reviewing things. So it's one of those two, possibly. I mean, we don't think that it's going to be a McLaren-Honda tie-up just based on their checkered past.
Here's
But you never
know what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. Honda's going to go to Aston Martin. Aston Martin and Honda.
They're good now.
Yeah, they'll have a couple good seasons. Lawrence Stroll will get power hungry and try to buy out the Honda engines, and then we'll have Aston Martin powertrains for the next couple years. And then in, you know, 9-10 years from now, Honda will go to Williams and never be an F1 after that, because Williams will still suck in 10 years.
I want to, Williams Honda would be cool. They were good for a little bit, and then
you sounded so sad.
Yeah, I'm still a Williams fan at heart. That's who I came into the sport liking, because I started liking around Y2K basically. So I was a fan of Juan Pablo Montoya, and he was in a Williams car that actually looked cool back then and was really good with BMW engines. So
wait, before we continue with whatever news you have left, when we were talking about me being old or not being old, so last week I was at the gym, and usually on Thursdays I work out with a trainer, and her and I are talking about music. And whatever song was on, it was the song, most probably 95% of our audience hasn't heard it. It's the Godsmack song that was in the Mummy movie, which was Brendan Fraser and whoever.
Yeah, Rachel Weisz.
Yeah. And I don't know what year that was, 2004-ish?
I think it was like 2000 was the first one. Okay. I'll look though. 2001. So, no, 2001 was the sequel. When was the first one? Hold on.
Oh God. It's even worse than I thought.
1999.
Okay, so not I had said bad. To her that the first one was like 2002, so I was a little off.
You weren't that bad. Yeah.
Anyway, she was like, oh, I was 1 year old. I'm like, oh, crap. I was like, oh, I was not yet driving, but almost driving.
No, you weren't. In 1999?
No, in 2000. And I'm sorry, I was saying this in 2002 terms, not 1999 terms.
Got it. Yeah, okay. Okay, well, I think I remember that Godsmack song, but I was hoping you were going to say the Godsmack song from, it was, I don't know. I got a lot of songs from video game soundtracks back in the day.
Yeah. I know what one, not that one. That's that is their better song, but
was it in like Tony Hawk Pro Skater, or like it was some, maybe it was Dave Mira, like biking game or something, BMX game.
I don't know.
It was one of those type things.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Let's continue on. Sorry.
No, it's okay. We just have two more kind of quick things.
Okay.
For all the people who are speculating consistently about Lewis Hamilton leaving Mercedes, he has now cleared that up for us, and he doesn't see himself going anywhere else. He's going to spend something, he said something like he's going to spend his time till the end of his days in F1 with Mercedes, like Stirling Moss did. So we can stop speculating about that. Instead, Christian Horner just said that he believes, what an old man. He just said he believes that Daniel Ricciardo is getting his mojo back. That's why I called him an old man.
Okay.
And he said, Daniel's just a positive energy to have around. It's great to see him getting his mojo back, to see that big smile on his face. He lights up a room when he walks in. It's like, wait, are these wedding vows?
That's like the way your grandpa talks about you.
His popularity in F1, even though he's not driving, he's still probably the most popular driver here. And for us, that's funny. He just said that Ricardo's still probably the most popular driver here and for us.
I mean,
that's a dig at Max.
I don't think it's necessarily a dig as much as
it's funny.
It's Christian going, listen, we know Max was talented. We also know Max is an asshole. So Max is, you know, not going to be the most popular driver on Red Bull or any team he's on. So, but I think that's him just being realistic.
Nah, it's shots fired. There's a rift at Red Bull. You heard it here first. So anyway, he's going to go drive the Red Bull F1 car at the Nürburgring. And there's all these things. Somebody asked him, should regular drivers Max Verstappen or Sergio be unable to compete? You know, is how race ready is Daniel Ricciardo? And Horner's response was, I'd say he's about 10 minutes away from being ready. He's in good shape. He's kept himself fit and well. I think that he's training hard and he's ready to go given the chance. So, hey, keep dreaming, Daniel Ricciardo fans, that he'll be back in that Red Bull seat, because I don't know, Christian Horner, either he's just doing this for fun to clown with everyone and like tease you, or he's maybe casually threatening Sergio Perez, you know, with someone breathing over his shoulder, ready to take that spot. Who knows?
Fair enough.
Okay, so I just have now actually I have two more things because I remembered one as I was reading that one.
Okay.
All right, there's this guy named Calvin Lowe. Have you heard of him? L-O?
Sounds vaguely familiar, but probably not.
Okay, so he is a billionaire.
Oh, is this one of the new team, potential new teams?
Yes, he's a billionaire from Hong Kong. And he's going to essentially, he's willing to back anyone who can get him into onto the grid in 2026. And he's got the money to do it.
I'll pay anybody.
Yeah, it's what it seems like. He owns some insurance company. I don't know much about it. But, you know, if you're a billionaire and you decide you want to go into F1, you can join the club. Like all the other billionaires. And
didn't we predict this would essentially happen?
Yeah, because instead of Andretti, it's going to be another billionaire entering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they see China as a really important market. So that's going to be their, what it's called, justification. Even though they keep talking about the U.S. as like their number one target.
Yep.
So let's just have three races there, but not have a team for the Americans to really root for and support.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Good idea, Stefano. Oh, there are two. Oh, man. I keep thinking of things that I saw earlier because I had to close all my tabs.
Pick one and then we'll save the rest.
Did you see all the Daniel Kvyat stuff that he said?
That he said no
on a podcast recently. It was somebody's podcast. He said a couple things, that he was offered the seat to go to Ferrari instead of Kimi Raikkonen. Oh,
yeah.
And then he talked about Red Bull stabbing him in the back. Like that's the way he put it, essentially.
I believe
by moving Max Verstappen into his seat without, it sounds like, giving him much warning at all, or they made him some promises that they didn't keep. We know that's the way the team is. It's just always interesting to hear people say it publicly.
But also, like I believe it. But also, if you see Max Verstappen and, you know, you're going, okay, Red Bull said I'll have the seat, you know, the next open seat, but Max Verstappen is at Toro Rosso and, you know, doing reasonably well, is holding his own at the time, and you aren't a little bit worried, you're delusional.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, now Daniel Kvyat is testing a Formula E car this weekend. So,
and he's about to race in WEC under an Italian racing license.
Is he really?
Yes. So you can get a racing license in Italy, even if, or, you know, in a country, even if you're not born there. You just can't race under the, obviously, he can't race under the Italian flag.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So that's what he has to do. All right. Well, I guess we'll end it there since you don't want to hear my other news.
Well, we've gone pretty long on this one, so we'll give everybody back a couple minutes, and I can wrap it up with, go check out the link to our Patreon. I'll make that our new pinned tweet on Twitter if I remember, and
I'll do it if you don't.
Yeah, thank you. This weekend, there is Formula E somewhere.
NASCAR, Berlin.
Berlin. Probably won't watch. NASCAR.
Tempelhof Airport.
Yep, definitely not watching. NASCAR is at Talladega. I might watch so I can take a nice Sunday afternoon nap. And I mean, I'm like kind of, I don't mind the super speedway races. And I actually didn't mind whatever race I watched last weekend.
The Bristol Dirt Race?
No, that was boring.
That was 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, that was not entertaining. But anyway, we'll wrap it there. Everybody, thank you for listening, and good day.
Have you ever wanted to know how to win a Formula One Grand Prix? I mean, really know. Know about the driver tactics from the cockpit, the strategy calls from the pit wall, and even the mind games in the paddock. There's a lot more that goes into winning a Grand Prix than just 90 minutes of racing. So every week on the F1 Strategy Report, we're taking a deep dive into the decisions that shape every result. Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato, and every week I'm joined by an expert guest from the paddock to talk through the big calls that won the race and the missteps that resulted in bitter defeat. Before every race, we'll look back at the previous year's result and consult the current form guide, and we'll be in your feed after every Grand Prix dissecting Indy outcome and what it means for the championship. So for your regular hit of Formula One analysis, subscribe to the F1 Strategy Report wherever you get your favourite podcasts. The Strategy Report is a Beer Mogul podcast on the Evergreen Podcasts Network. My name's Michael Laminato, and I'll catch you after the checkered flag.